This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Hey everybody, Carm Capriotto, Remarkable Results Radio and another Town Hall Academy. I'm here just north of New York City at the 22nd annual TST Big Event. Thanks so much to G. Jerry Trulia for having us down here. I've got this great episode for you, and I've got so many questions because I just sat through about 45 minutes of the first seminar today, and we pulled my two guests out. But we are going to talk about education, training. But first, thanks to our great sponsors. Hey, did you know that Napa Tracks has on-site training plus six-day-a-week support? Well, it all starts when a local representative meets with you to learn about your business and how you run it. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice. Let us prove to you that Tracks is the single best shop management system in the business. Find Napa Tracks on the web at napatracks.com. Ready to optimize with today's class? Boy, listen to an episode we did with David Boies. Great program. Roll out a training plan for your automotive shop. In just 5 minutes daily, boost knowledge, retention, and improve team performance. Start seeing results today. Join your peers at todaysclass.com. With me is Eric Ziegler from Tech Mentor out of Florida. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Carm.
It's been a while that you've been on the podcast.
Seems that way.
It does seem that way. I haven't looked it up yet, but God, I always love to have you on.
Thank you for the invite.
And Pete Meyer is here from Dorman Training. Hi, Pete.
Hey, Carm. How you doing?
Guys, I got a million questions. Where's training heading? All this stuff. But what I have to say is, listen, the world knows I'm not a specialist, a technician. The world knows that. And I sat into the first 40 minutes of Bill Weaver this morning talking about sensors. And I'm just empathizing with all the people in the room. I don't know, 400 or 500 of them in this big ballroom. And I'm thinking within the first 8 minutes, there was so much to learn or to confirm or to understand. And so that my biggest question to both of you, because you're out doing this all the time, where are the people that should be in this room? And I know that's this crazy, big, heavy question that we ask. But if you're listening to this, and you're an owner who says, well, my guys won't go to training. Stop it. Eric, you're teaching this afternoon. What's the topic?
Scan tool diagnostics.
It's like probably in the first 15 minutes, people are going to pick up some credible advice to help them. And one of the things that Bill said early on was, this is a career, one hell of an opportunity to flourish your career with continuing education. First of all, are we begging for people to get the classes? Are we finding resistance? Or do you see that where training is heading, guys, that there's more and more new faces coming into your classes? Eric?
I primarily either do contract fleet training through Turbo Training, where we do municipalities, Department of Transportation, things like that. Those guys are required to be there. Either it's a union gig or it's, you know, hey, you will be here from this hour to this hour. Or I do a lot of like big events, like the big event, pun intended, here today, to where I always pull the class and say, how many people are here for the first time, such as Vision or Seattle? You know, ATE was just 2 weeks ago. And there is an influx of young people, but at the same time, there tends to be a certain amount of technician, either burnout or apathy, where it's hard to get butts in seats. If you talk to somebody, you know, that does the scheduling and things of that nature. I think a lot of shop owners either have to be creative and require it, or I had several friends that are shop owners that predicate vacation time or paid time off based upon the expectation of so many hours of training in a year.
Yeah,
and it's a contract.
That's going on.
Kind of thing.
I've heard about great Christmas bonuses depending on the investment. Owners are saying, listen, I'll pay for anything you want to go to, but you got to go. And here's the hours that get you your minimum bonus by the end of the year. And I keep hearing it's 40.
That's a number that I've heard. And I have shop owner friends that have, you've actually increased that. But it also changes things. I know that Pete could probably speak on this as well, that like the concept of training being something that happens on a weekday night in Missoula, Montana, and you get a, you know, blimpy sandwich and a root beer or whatever, you know, that's after you've worked the whole day. There's also people that like think that you should have technician training during the day, and shop owners generally kind of push back on this and say, hey, I'm losing production to do this. But you have many shops like, say, at Vision, places like that, that are encouraged the whole shop to shut down and to attend. So it's I don't know that there's one cookie cutter answer. That's kind of what my technician mentoring thing that I formed several years ago is, to bring training to the shop and work with the technicians one-on-one three or four times a year and help kind of grow them. And, you know, there's also a PowerPoint like presentation component to it, usually like on a Saturday or something, but it brings up all the questions like, are technicians being paid to be there? Some technicians see it as, hey, anything I can learn, I can take with me. There's two schools of thought. If you educate somebody, they'll stick around. Or the other one is, if I educate them, they may take their skills that that I taught them and go to work for my coworker.
Yeah. Are shops getting together and saying, let's do this Saturday thing, and everybody's helping afford and bringing more technicians in?
That is the business model that I have. Usually it's a half day of observation of the shop and giving like technicians ability to have an anonymous voice. I find that a lot of, you know, shops will have some sort of coach and they'll have their numbers right. And like many people that are on your show, and we're like, we're buying shops and we're just crushing it and everything. And you go behind the scenes and you say, hey, I'm going to give you the opportunity to say whatever you would like. I'm not going to mention you by name. And you get this impression from the shop owner that things have never been better. We are crushing it. And like, you've got a 3 out of 10, you know, cumulative score from your technicians on, you know, do they feel like they're working like a borrowed mule? Do they, you know, would they appreciate free ice cream Friday? Something like that could totally change the dynamics of things. So that's usually part of the day. And then usually I have a full day with technicians that I work with them, kind of feel out their skill set. And then to your point, usually that might be like Friday, and then Saturday, they might be a PowerPoint presentation that they have like their buddy shop come to help offset some of the expense as well.
Yeah.
But the idea is to grow technicians from the inside. A lot of people have good, you know, alignment technicians, brake technicians, things like that, that have been with them a long time, that are really dedicated, and they don't come with, I don't like the ABC connotation of technicians, but A technicians sometimes have a little bit of baggage that comes with them because they know they could go to work anywhere, right?
Listen, don't get me on my soapbox about ABC, because I so firmly agree with you, by the way. Pete, we're doing this episode for the industry with two really highly respected and admired trainers in the industry. Maybe my intention, because I always have an intention about advancing the industry, to get maybe just two more owners that are listening to this saying, God, I'm going to make a decision to commit to a continuing education program for my people. And I'm going to go out and look. I'm going to go to my suppliers. I'm going to go to events like this to interview shop owners that close down, to your point, and bring their people. And I say, off the side, what are you spending? Well, me and, you know, the entire team is here. I'm talking service advisors, general managers. We're spending like $12,000.
Either we drop in the bucket for some shops, because you got to figure out you're also having the loss of production, that you are losing a whole day's production. A lot of times those people are paying people to be there.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And to all of that point, they still do it, and they've done it year after year after year, and they find no loss of revenue or profit in their company, and they benefit in so many different ways. And the story that I told this past week at a Napa BDG meeting that I was at, you know, doctors have to go to training, but you never know. They just don't schedule work on those days. So we can tell our customers via the internet, via sign on the door, or the fact that we scheduled zero work, or you build yourself a little tiny infrastructure of a couple of people there just in case there's an emergency for somebody. I'm not sure that even the people that are left there can handle that emergency, right? Close, go to training, go to these conferences. And Pete, are you seeing or hearing a lot more about this whole commitment to continuing education? Or are you talking to more owners and getting them off their terrible intention? Wow, that's a loaded question.
Yeah, kind of his. I think, first of all, to Eric's point, there are those who have seen the light, so to speak, and have made those commitments. I think when I was still a technician, it was, again, as Eric was saying, a lot of apathy among technicians. And I used to blame the technicians for that. And then I had an epiphany. I said, it's not the techs, it's the culture of the shop that they work in. You know, when it becomes a part of that culture that you're going to need to grow as a technician to stay with this team, and we'll help you do that. You know, so there are those that have found that. But I think another part that I see, there's I think, what, 800,000 technicians in our industry now?
About that, yeah.
You don't see 800,000 people at any of these events. You know, it's a very small percentage. And what
and the same people.
Yeah, the same people. And what I found traveling on the Crunchy, I think Eric could probably agree with me, is that there are so many technicians and shop owners in the country who have no idea what Vision is or ATE is or any of these events are.
Yeah.
And even when I was with the magazine, reaching, just going to say, hey, I'm with Motor Age. And they go, who? I've never heard of them. And that's been around since 1899. So they were not, didn't start yesterday. You know what I mean? I see a lot of that where technicians that I have now that are going up to the training events that I'm doing around the country and now into Canada, these, they don't know the resources exist. And once they find where they exist, I see a lot of interest and involvement and some excitement when they get to get this kind of training. And just helping them realize the things that they don't know what they don't know, especially with the changing technologies. You know, that's one of his favorite comments when he teaches, and I've kind of taken on that as well. Early on, you know, it's teaching them to RTFI when they're looking at a service procedure or vehicle they have never worked on before. You know, you got to read the friggin' information before you dive in.
I thought it was RTFM, manual. Read the frigging manual.
I'm an RTFI guy.
You're okay. I'll accept that. Yeah.
But yeah, I think a big part of it is just getting the word to the masses. Yeah, guess what? You know, we can help you be better than what you are today. Because I think, and we saw this way, way back in the Auto Mechanica, the very first one, where men and women, for the most part in our industry, know they can be better, want to be better, but don't know how. And if we can show them the how, what do they say? They can build it and they'll come. So that's what we need to do.
There was $1 million worth of information in the first 45 minutes that I heard Bill Weaver today. And for anyone in that room that could walk away after whatever they spent and thought that they never got any value for it. And I love the word that you used. You used the word resources. And we're not, as an industry, tapping into every little tiny nook and cranny. And I guess if they're not reading and don't know what Motor Age is, then they don't know what all the other magazines. Or how about this? Think of the number of email addresses that all the media outlets have that promote this stuff all the time. And still, out of those 40, 50, 80,000, 100,000 emails, whatever they're out there.
Not even people, scratching the surface.
100%. So piggybacking on what Pete had said, I think, I'm not one to, I don't like really like sports metaphors, but they always talk about building the culture, the locker room kind of thing. I think that starts a long way with it. That if you have a culture in a shop that promotes education, that promotes advancement, that you have value intrinsically to me as a team member. And the other thing about going to training isn't just so much as you went to a great class, but we've often talked of the networking aspects of it. And I, you know, shameless self-promotion for the, you know, here on WorldPAC's WTI benefit, like they have a it's every other year event called STX. We had at the last one in last year, they rented the whole Gaylord Hotel in Nashville, Tennessee. They had 400 and some classes. They had 178 instructors. The whole thing was like a cruise. Like you bought WorldPAC auto parts or whatever, and they went and it was all inclusive. But I mean, you could get specific training on Mercedes-Benz, on BMW, on Porsche. And it was a culture of people. So like you're an eclectic guy. If you work on, you're a Porsche master technician, I think most people would agree. And you're probably starved to find other than, hey, I work for Porsche, to get factory training would be your only option. And then you have an aftermarket ability to do so at a great thing. And you're sitting next to a room full of people who either aspire to be really great in Porsche, Mercedes, BMW, Volvo, what have you, or they already are. And that's a huge resource when you go to a class and you meet Pete Meyer, you meet Pete Landry, you meet...
And Eric Ziegler.
I don't know about all that. Peter Orlando, we'll stick with the Petes, right?
All the Petes.
So yeah.
Oh my God, I never thought of how many Petes there are.
Not to mention Scott Manna.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Little inside joke there.
Yes, there is. Oh my God.
That was probably one of the last podcasts that I did. See how many times we could mention Scott Manna. But the networking portion of that, exchanging a number... And it's a little cliche, but a rising tide lifts all ships.
Yeah.
Like everybody has worked in a shop or worked with somebody that was negative Ned or negative Nancy, whatever. And it's like a cancer on the shop.
All right. Nuts and bolts, guys. Let's go to nuts and bolts. You're sending your people to training wherever. Let's just take, because we're here feeling and experiencing the TST big event. Take as many notes. What would we want to tell as an owner, our people that are going to events? Got the manual, as take as many notes. If something comes in your head, write it down. And oh, by the way, when you come back to the shop, we need you to tell your peers that maybe we didn't give a chance to send almost everything that you took away, big highlights, things you highlighted, things you circled on your paper. And because when you teach, you learn. And if somebody comes up and says, oh my God, I got this really about squeezing the wire and this and doing all these in the sensors and blah, blah, blah. I think that helps build that culture, to your point.
And introduce yourself to somebody, exchange information, not to beat a dead horse, what we were talking about. That is a critical component of it. You know what I mean? Like, if you take away one thing, if you know, take one thing from your podcast as your moniker, if you learn one thing in a class, that's one thing. If you went to, say, the TST big event, like, this is a culmination of 22 years in the making. And there are people of the top technicians from all the Northeast that are here. Many people have been on your shows, the Brian Pollocks, things like that, that all bring something to it. And I'm an old deadhead from way back, and I've always loved the lyric in the song named St. Stephen that says, one man gathers what another man spills, right? You bring your shared experience. It would be like you being at a podcasting convention or something like that. You're picking up on, you know, the best placement of the mic or whatever. Yeah, you get jammed up on it, and you're like, oh, I can call Peter Podcast or whatever and say, hey, what am I doing wrong? I met him in Montreal at some thing. I mean, so I think that's a critical component to it. The culture thing builds that way when you start to introduce yourself to other people. I'm sure your shop owner friends would tell you that in their stuff, that like, hey, I took a page out of Sos book. I went to a 4-day work week. I have ice cream Fridays. I have whatever.
Let's face it. Your shop management system is the single most important tool in your shop, period. NapaTrax was built from the ground up to make your business more profitable and efficient. We provide an extensive set of tools to increase and track profitability in real time. NapaTrax offers the industry's best post-sale support, hands down, and we train your people on site. Yep, on site. And we offer remote refresher training 10 times a week, and customer support is open 6 days a week. Give us a call, visit the website, or join our Facebook community today to learn more. We'll prove to you that Trax is the single best shop management system in the business. NapaTrax is always customized and tailored for you, whether you're a one-man shop or a large multi-bay or multi-location company. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice. Visit us on the web at NapaTrax, that's NapaTrax.com. Strengthen your shop's entire team with today's class. Everyone from technicians to service advisors can access impactful training on their phones in just 5 minutes a day. Opt for solo sessions or ignite friendly competition, challenging team members to climb the leaderboard for the highest score. Our effective daily training ensures measurable progress, helping you develop your team. Train smarter, not harder, with today's class and transform your shop and your people. Start seeing results today at todaysclass.com. Can we help build a stronger training culture, Pete, from the students that we have in front of us by telling them, okay, who's an owner? Who's a tech? They raise their hand. You come up with what that split is inside the room, and you tell the techs, here's what I need you to do to go back after you're done with training today or this particular hour. What a way to help build a training culture inside of a team by telling, not selling, but telling the why that they need to go back and share.
Two things. I think Mr. Weaver made a very interesting comment right at the very beginning of his presentation. You know, there's a lot of us who are getting older in the industry. And he said, you don't take your knowledge with you when you're retired. Do what you can now to mentor the younger ones coming up.
Exactly.
Share your knowledge, share your experience. And the younger ones have to be willing to take that on and look for that and actively require that. Now, the only caveat that I say to that is, it's got to be accurate and up-to-date information. One of the very first things I teach in every class, I try to give a little reality check to the technicians and the owners that are there. And we talk about some of the changes to technology. I do just a very simple brake job comparison. And I always get the same response wherever I do this. I'll just give you a real quick, the elevator version. you know, the OEMs have been using DOT-4 brake fluid for a number of years. And then I asked them, so are you going to change the fluid on this customer's car? It requires that the fluid has failed the testing. So which DOT-4 are you going to use? And guys look at me like, what do you mean? Brand? Or they have no idea that there are different types of DOT-4 brake fluids. There are two different viscosities. And most of the major manufacturers are using this lower viscosity fluid in their vehicles because it allows them to build system brake pressures much faster and in need for emergency correction, whether it's a lane departure or anti-collision avoidance, whatever the case might be. And if you put the wrong viscosity in it, that increases that amount of time, which could be the difference between an accident not happening and one that does. So I let them know that if you did do the wrong fluid and something does happen, guess where they're going to come next? They're going to come to your door. And that leaves you open for liability. I'm not trying to scare them. What I'm trying to get them to understand is that this isn't your daddy's Oldsmobile. You have got to keep up with the times. You've got to read that information. You've got to understand that the process is in place that you have to do on today's vehicles. And another thing that Tony Martin shared with me that I use all the time is the challenge today is not just to learn, but you may have to unlearn and relearn in order to stay current. So you have that aspect. We have to mentor these young people coming up. We have to share the knowledge that's given, but we have to make sure the information we're passing along is correct.
I'm blown away by the simplicity of that reality. And it seems like we're living in a world of overconfident and older decisions that we're so used to. It's just this habit. Just do that. Yeah, it's habit. And we're making an assumption that as technology moves forward so damn fast, and no one's reading RTFM, RTFI, that we're doing a disservice to our client. We don't know it. And it was this past week at our independent breakfast that we have 8-9 years now going, that a discussion on ADAS came up. And it was a discussion that if this component was changed or fixed or repaired on this vehicle, if you did the RTFM, you would see that the OE says it's required to do a recalibration. And there's too many people in our industry that are ignoring. First of all, they're not reading that. They're not finding that out, and they're right. Ignoring that.
It's super easy to find out.
It's not just changing. If the component has to be removed as part of another service, they think that holding it back on is okay.
Right.
Because I didn't change anything, which is not entirely true.
Do we need a big lawsuit to wake us all up?
Well, that's where my business and many other of my colleagues all had the OE method of doing ADIS. We've been in the ADIS repair calibration space for the last 10 years until I stepped out. One thing being said was not only is it in the service information, but the current service information. So you may have one job aid that says one says, oh, if I change the alignment, I have to do a camera calibration. And then they may go and say, oh, we had to pay out a lot. The insurance company isn't down with doing that. We've now scrubbed that and said, if you it was a collision or if there was a airbag deployment, then we have to do the camera calibration. But the last one, you know, a year, 18 months before that may have said from the OE, yes, you have to do it if you do a thrust angle alignment. So it's dynamic. It's changing all the time. But yes, 100%, like read the service information. It's mission critical. They're mission critical safety systems. They have the ability to steer the car, stop the car, accelerate the car, etc. And one of the things about ADIS is people bought cars with those subsystems on there for those subsystems. I remember when I was doing Jerry's TST four-stop deal, I rented a 2019 Corolla because I had to go to four different stops, Auburn, Massachusetts, Danbury, Connecticut, G's shop in Totowa, New Jersey was the other one. And I had a 19 Corolla base model, and it had pre-collision 2 on it. It had, you know, side object detection. It had rear cross traffic alert. It had lane departure. It had all these things on a base model car. So it's coming, and like it's been here for quite a while.
Right.
You know what I mean? The technicians have to adapt to those and to be able, and they always say in business, the worst thing you can do is to say we've always done it this way. So one of the ones that I always use with technicians is Ford had a four-cylinder engine that had no keyways on the crankshaft, on the crank gear, or on the harmonic balancer pulley. And if you had to pull the engine out, the harmonic balancing pulley hit the strut tower if you tried to pull it out from the top. Ford said pull the whole, do a powertrain drop through the bottom of it, So what Tex would do, that we're Freddie Flatriders, because we sell our souls 6 minutes at a time. My friend Justin Morgan, I got to give him props for that. I heard that one of his classes, and his owners or Tex, we know what that means. 6 minutes at a time, we sell our souls. We would take that pulley off and go, oh, I can get it right out the top. And then they would put a used engine in or something, go, oh, wait a minute, I have to take that pulley off the used engine so I can get it in the engine bay and put it in, and the car wouldn't start. And if you had a really bad day, you know, it moved the cam crank timing or whatever, and you looked on the back of the pulley and there's no keyway on it to index it where it goes on there. And you think, oh, surely they wouldn't do it with the cam crank timing, would they? They use diamond encrusted washers on there, and there's a procedure. So if you did something as simple as a front crank seal on a four-cylinder, you know, mid-2000s four-cylinder engine on a Ford, and you didn't put it in base timing, you could do irreparable damage to that engine. It's a zero clearance motor. You can bend the valves. Something as simple as, hey, I've put 300 front crank seals in my lifetime. You just take the belt off, you pull the pulley off, you pop the old seal out, you put the new one in, like Pete was referring to the brake fluid thing. That's changed.
You both have so much wisdom. Been there, done that. And think about the power of mentoring. We're bringing interns up in our industry, which we have to do more of. But just that wisdom of saying, by the way, you stay current because you know that we're in this evolving change. There's a rediscovery going on all the time, and the OEs are having a blast, maybe not a blast, but making all these changes to particular requirements of fluids and how they want these vehicles repaired and how they're saying it's required. We don't even know about it. We're just ignoring things.
These cars today, and for many years now, are extremely high tech. The tolerance has gone down to next to nothing. Service procedures have become very specific, and to use his term, mission critical to the proper repair of the vehicle. There's no such thing as close enough anymore. You either fixed the car right or you didn't fix the car right. 100%. There's no in between. And going back to the mentoring, I'm all for that, but I'm also very concerned where the information is coming from. Again, the accuracy of the information is critical. You can't just teach it the young guy because that's the way we've always done it.
Yeah.
That doesn't apply. Mm. It hasn't applied for many years. You have to show them the correct way to do it, even if you don't, maybe you don't know that you don't know the correct way to do it. You know, I mean, whoever thought as a tech back in the early 70s, early 80s, you know, when I first started,
no,
that I would have to tell a car that I put a battery in the car. You know, now that's routine.
You're not that old.
Well, I started when I was 15.
Okay, good. Right? Thank you.
And out of kindergarten, he was like,
yeah. But one, back in the days of full service gas stations, you may remember what that is.
But there was a certain culture coming up. And I, like, one of the things somebody asked me, like, what's the crux of your classes? My classes are, because I've had no formal training, no high school auto mechanics, no, you know, VOTEC, anything, has all been experience based. So I try to have a common sense approach because I'm dyslexic. I don't read particularly well, that I have a logical or common sense approach that I use. And I often, like, it's cliche, but it's the old, give a man a fish, teach a man to fish. Or a person, I guess, would be the unisex term. Give a person a fish, teach a person to fish. The brake fluid question, the Ford, no keyways, that's giving you a fish. The method on it is read the service information, silly, right? That if you are arming yourself, and it's meant so like dyslexic diagnostic dummies like me can read it because it's three paragraphs long, that you can read the description of operation. What has changed is people don't think like, oh, I got to put a battery in. It's easy peasy lemon squeezy. I'm taking the battery out and putting it in. And then if you read the service information, it says, well, have the battery backup on there, because if not, you could lock the radio out. You could be in a mobilizer situation. The key fobs could no longer work. All the stuff that, like, as a technician, you're like, oh, it's a cold morning. It just doesn't crank in Buffalo, New York and 20 degrees and it cranked fine when it was 50, right? That first cold snap, you're putting batteries in. But if you didn't read the service information, if you do it the same way you always did, you find out a painful lesson.
Been a lot of talk lately about batteries in my circle. It's been amazing. But so many of the people that didn't go to work during the COVID thing and their cars sat for so long, and then after they decided that they were going to, cars wouldn't start.
That's something else too. When we're doing electrical classes, and it all starts with that battery.
Yeah.
Most techs don't understand that there are different types of batteries to deal with. I ask shops early on, if you still have that little two-wheeled battery charger in your shop that you can't adjust for the different type of batteries, how many of you guys still have that? It still amazes me How many guys look at me and go like, oh, yeah, I do. And I tell them, when you go back to the shop tomorrow, throw that in the dumpster. Take it to the junkyard. There's no place in your shop anymore.
It's gone. Like,
well, it could double as an arc welder. Most of those had pretty solid transformers. You could put a 6013 welding rod in it and weld with it.
And I didn't know that.
You're so funny. You're funny.
I'm being sarcastic. But I mean, like, they were wound with big transformers and rectifiers, likes that modern battery chargers don't. But, like, it's also, you're pushing way more electrons in a lot of times. They have a lot of AC voltage ripple that goes in, you know, to the battery. So, yeah, I mean, you've got battery construction, AGM batteries, gel batteries. You have a vast different amount of types of stuff, and each one has different functionalities. You have start-stop batteries that'll cause drivability problems if they go dead. And again, they're hard to access. They're usually under the seat. Things like that. If you didn't know, read the service information. Wow, there's another battery here.
And common again, theme here. Goes right back to you. Exactly. It's you have to do your homework. You have to, even if you say you've been working on Toyotas for years, if that model has never been in your shop before, then you don't know anything about that model. You need to do your homework. And sometimes you may have to do your homework on things that you have been doing incorrectly and didn't know it. Will it show up tomorrow? Will it show up next week? Probably not. But you are setting that up for a problem down the road.
So where are our people in the industry, owners and technicians that I love to call specialists today? Is the social media forums, are they hurting us or helping us? Any idea?
Social media is a double-edged sword. I think there's a lot of vitriol, a lot of like craziness. If anybody's got teenage kids or whatever, like they understand the negative side of social media. Sports athletes were stoned, you know, during the NCAA tournament. There were a couple of players that played not up to par. And because now you can bet on sports, everybody's like flaming these people out. It's a good and bad. At the same time, like if you have to have some social media presence, because millennials don't say, hey, dad, my water pump went out of my car. Who works on our cars again? And they say, oh, yeah, it's, you know, Brent Klein at Accurate Auto in Melbourne or somewhere like that. They've worked on our cars for generations. They go, water pump near me, right? The same way you would find a restaurant if you were in a city you didn't know. And if you don't have a good Google rating, you know what I mean? If you're not in the, you know, over 4.5, they're going to look somewhere else.
That's a great point.
You know, and that's just a change in it. My, like, have you ever wondered why, like, there's so many generational shops that begin with A, like double A, triple A, quadruple A, quadruple A plus automotive? That was because they came in the first thing you saw in the Donnelly directory, which is dating myself with the yellow pages, you know. Stop so it. If it was Ziegler Automotive and say I was in Chicago where there were 28,000 shops, I would be all the way at the end unless I paid huge money to have a full page ad up by the A's. But Google does the sorting out and it does it through syntax. And it now you pop out like, hey, you can pay people to have your Google reviews. So you fall out on the thing faster. You know, and it's not just alphabetically related. So, I mean, it's a good and bad. I think it also, we have, you know, I would be a liar to say I've never looked at a YouTube video on how to repair things. But I think people like, would be like, hey, I've got a brain tumor or whatever. Hey, maybe there's a YouTube video on that. I could get a scalpel and maybe hold a mirror. I could do it myself, save a couple bucks. You know, that's the ludicrous end
get
of it.
Get your DeWalt.
Yeah.
But wood, flat wood drill, too.
But you know what I mean? Some of those things like, hey, how to plug a tire, and you watch a YouTube video, and you get a Harbor Freight tire rope plug kit, and you do it. God bless. You know what I mean? That's
how great. Do you really feel?
I mean, it's one of those things that changes the industry. And we came from, and I think Pete would agree, that most of us came from a background of, I know Pete was in the military. Like if you're from the Midwest, maybe you grew up on a farm, you grew up, you know, putting the bean head on the combine, you knew nutsy, boltsy kind of things. What's changed, and Scott Shotton always says that kids don't work on their own bikes anymore. And that was one of the tertiary entry level things as a mechanic. Like by the time I was 6, 7, 8 years old, I had every bicycle I'd ever owned tore apart. By high school, I was working on my instructor's cars.
Did you build a hybrid version?
I did not have a hybrid version. They did not have the battery-powered bike that seems to be all.
Oh, I don't mean a hybrid as far as electric, but you take all these bikes apart and you have Oh my God, look at this.
I had the chop look, version.
With okay,
the,
that's what I mean.
With yeah, the, right. the
inch pipes jammed up there. Yeah, yeah.
That's what I mean.
Like right after Easy Rider.
Easy Rider. I was just thinking of Peter Fonda. Like
chopped. I forgot. I didn't come up with the right word. Chop. Yeah, yeah chop yeah. it up. Yeah.
And if you had the original, whatever the choppers. Schwinn version of the Springer front end.
My first
orange,
bike.
Orange crate, lemon peeler.
My first bike ever.
I have a Schwinn. Friend of mine that collects those, and those are worth good money if they are in pristine condition.
I lived on the side of a hill, right? And I got my first Schwinn bike, and I went up to the top, and I wanted to see how fast this puppy could go.
Shift on the thing?
No, it was still, but I didn't have a helmet. I didn't even know if this thing could break at that speed. We took chances. We played outside.
That was during the Evel Knievel era as well. It didn't go so well for him. And I always use in my class, the Bell motorcycle used to have an ad in the back of every motorcycle motocross magazine. And I remember it because I come from the BMX generation and Perry Kramer and Stu Thompson, all these guys in California, they wore Vans leathers. They wore Bell motorcycle helmets. So I remember when the Bell Full Moto 2 came out. And I had a mini bike that I bought at a garage sale with a neighbor kid. My old man found out about it. And he said, hey, if you're going to ride, you're going to want wear a helmet. He was a big safety person. And at the time, Kmart sold helmets for $10. And they were not, you know, safety certified. They were made out of pressed cardboard and a little bit of felt. And they were in these awful metal flake colors, you know, candy apple red, midnight blue. And they were $10. And if you literally drop them off the shelf, they would crack like an egg. So there was a Bell Moto 2 first came out. And my dad said, well, I've got a friend who's got a motorcycle shop. And I went, he's like, I don't know, they're brand new. I could sell you at cost. And it was over $200. So it was $10 versus $200 as a kid. And I still remember vividly in the back of every motocross magazine, they must have had a board meeting about it. And Bell Motorcycle, somebody must have said, hey, why don't we, you know, they were talking about adjusting price point to be in consistent with their market. And somebody must have said, why don't we just tell the valors of our $200 helmet? And they had a very simplistic ad that had a Bell Moto 2 and light shining, water spritzed on it and light shining on it like it was the Holy Grail. And it said, if you have a $10 head, wear a $10 helmet, Bell Motorcycle helmets. And every shop in the United States should have that. So like if you have somebody who's price shopping or whatever, so well, you are more expensive than Joe down the street, you know, no deference to anybody named Joe who's listening to the podcast. Explain the quality of your wares, the training that your guys do. I mean, it's on every doctor's office where you go to, like I'm accredited by X, Y, and Z. AMA this. And one of the other things is in our industry, and I'm a little bit on my soapbox about this, is that you can't get a doctor in the lower 48 to testify in a malpractice suit if you like amputated the wrong part, you were on narcotics. We throw shade on one another. Guy comes in
all
and
the
says,
time.
Hey, I was at, we'll use Pete because Pete's got thick skin. I was at Pete's shop down the street. He gave me a price of so many coconuts to replace the transmission of my car. And I go, Pete, great guy. Don't get me wrong. He's my brother-in-law. He's married to my sister. I bowl with him. We ride motorcycles. We're in the same kids' charity together. I would let him work on my lawnmower. And we throw that shade, nothing against people, we throw that shade on our brother and that race for the bottom as far as like,
I know.
Is going to kill
so
us all.
Wrong. Where's the ethics?
$10 head, $10 helmet. You get what you pay for sometimes.
I love it.
Yeah. I want to go touch back on what you're asking about social media. It goes back to what we've been saying.
Yeah, please. Oh, by the way, just to say, one of the greatest storytellers I've ever had on right here, but go ahead.
Yeah. Well, as far as like technicians looking for information or looking for opinions, there are some that are good and there are some that are just atrocious. Again, it goes back to vetting your source. And when you're sharing information or when information is being shared on social media, no matter what the platform is, whether it's a Facebook page or it's a YouTube channel or whatever the case might be, podcast.
Well, seriously, it's, Matt. And
yes.
Like Craig,
it's got to be
Craig do a great job.
The right information. And that's one of the things I kind of learned early on when I first started with the magazine as a freelancer. I was having fun. I was doing some case study articles for the magazine and submitting them and didn't really think twice about it. You know, I was still turning a wrench. And then I did one, I'll never forget, I did one on fuel pump diagnosis. And I had my butt handed to me by technicians all around the country. And that's when I realized that, you know what? This is how I learned. You don't know what you don't know. Uh-huh. You know, my article is based on my particular frame of reference, and I was wrong. And I went, you know what? From that point on, I made sure to do my research. And when I was the technical editor for the magazine, I was adamant about making sure that the material, that's why I reached out to guys like Eric and Scott, some of these top trainers in the country to write for the magazine at the time, because I wanted the information presented to be current, accurate, up-to-date information that guys could depend on.
And I would piggyback on that, that it's not just social media tends to be about the likes. YouTube, you get paid more money based on more people who subscribe to your channel.
Noise. That,
yeah. So there could be noise. But I mean, there are many great podcasters out there. Yeah. Like I said, Matt Fanslow does a great job. You know, Craig O'Neill on the business side. Yeah. Brian Pollock is getting into that as well. Great podcaster or YouTube channel people. Paul Scanner Danner for years, you know, salt of the earth kind of guy, college instructor, VOTEC instructor. Been in the industry a while, but has a very simplistic way of reaching people. And it's not like, oh, Paul has three videos. You know, Paul has a library of stuff that he's done. Yeah. And it's, you have to do, like you said, you have to sift through the noise. Mm.
Guys, thank you. I know, hopefully we have changed some mindsets out there on committing to becoming a more learned student. I like the word training, but I love the word continuing education. And I think that's the commitment that owners and the specialists that work on our bays have to commit to, that what am I going to learn new today? And who's going to be in my network? And what training am I going to? And I think the career pathing that needs to be set with ownership, wherever you're working, I think if you go and you're looking for a new job, I think the commitment to continuing education needs to be part of your deal or whatever it is that's the culture inside the shop. And hopefully today you both brought some of that to light.
I want to add one more thing, because again, there's a lot of great training events around the country with phenomenal instructors doing a fantastic job of bringing that accurate information to people who attend. But information not used is lost.
Yeah.
The guys who learn all this, they're with the learning, just like sensor testing that Bill Weaver's teaching. If they don't go back to the shop and they don't blow the dust off of that scope and they don't hook up the sensors on a known good car to see what it looks like, to get comfortable with the tool, to put into practice what they learned that day, that weekend before, then the time they spent there was just a waste of time. You know, one way to do that, as you mentioned earlier, is, hey, show the guys who couldn't go what you learned.
Yeah.
Let's get some pizza. Let's take the lunch hour and we'll go play with this car.
Yeah.
You know. But even if you're not doing that, even if you're only tech in the shop and you were able to come to an event like this, you've got to go back and play with it. You've got to make that information yours, or it's going to be useless.
So there's a real thing called the forgetting curve. I've seen the chart, and it's a 30-day chart, but it really steeps quickly in the first, I think, week or, you know, maybe 10 days, and then it just trickles off if you don't do something with what you just learned. I think in concepts, the scary thing, and to go back to the shop, we need to create inside the training culture of our business a gather around moment. I know it's cutesy sounding, but who's doing the gather around moment? Meaning, come here, let me tell you what I learned, or come here, I found something so interesting, gather around. And maybe you spend 5 to 8 minute gather around moment.
Just people listening to your podcasts, if they pick up something from whatever episode that they're listening
to. Absolutely.
And they go, wow, that's a great idea. Wow, that's a great piece of information. But they don't take action on it.
That's right.
Then it's useless to them. Putting it in action could make a tremendous difference in their business bottom line or for techs, make more money for themselves and their families. That's what it's about for me.
Yeah.
If I meet technicians and I can help them make a more efficient living, make more money than I did, be better providers for their family, get the nicer things in life for their family because of something they've increased in their skill set or make their jobs more efficient, then that's a win-win. But unless you put it into play, you're not going to reap those benefits.
Great last words.
One other thing that I would piggyback on, I'll say the thing that the elephant in the room nobody wants to address, that this is a business, whether you're a shop owner, you're looking at your bottom line, you're, you know, 1120 form at the end of the year. If you are a technician, you're looking at your W-2 at the end of the year. So the podcast thing was always, as I understood it, was meant for people who like audiobooks, things like that. Yeah. Like you're going to, on your commute, you're going to learn one thing each way, right? 22-mile commute. So one of the come hither, gather around kind of thing, we have to change the structure of how we pay technicians. When we sell our souls 6 minutes at a time, and you're going to be like, hey, come gather around for 3/10. You know what I mean? You just cost me 18 minutes of my life. What was that? What did that equate? And when we pay, like GM traditionally pays dealership technicians, 3/10 for drivability, you don't get a whole lot of testing when that's how that's paid. So we need to change that culture on how we pay techs. We need to how we charge for our wares with our customer. You would not do a Google search and do you had a, God forbid, glioblastoma or something like that and go, hey, who's the cheapest brain surgeon near me, right? You would go like, hey, I want to see your accreditation. I want to know what your success rate is, things like that. It's different. You know what I mean?
So well said. A million thoughts going through my head, but we're going to end it there. Okay. Thank you.
Pleasure as always. Thank you for having me.
I think we've said a lot that would hopefully move some people in a different direction that they currently may be at. Maybe they're stuck somewhere. Eric Ziegler, Pete Meyer, thanks for being here.
Pleasure. Appreciate it.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.